Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. It's good to be back here in the studio with you at OC Talk Radio, and I'd like to welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie. This is where we dissect strategies and tactics used by successful people who want to make life changes that is necessary for their meaningful next chapter, and as a result, end up offering suggestions to us for our next chapter. And today, my special guest is Lyndon Crow, who is president of Productive Learning, a company whose goal, I love this, whose goal is to help people become the best version of themselves. Well, I'm Lyndon, I'm looking to be the best version of myself at the end of today.
Well, perfect. Let's get started.
Lyndon, well, we're going to get started. I'm going to read one little quote of yours that I like. And you wrote, quoting, "For me, life is about helping people take ownership of their realities and set paths forward to uncover the greatest joys possible. There is simply nothing more satisfying than watching an individual dig deep inside themselves and uncover truths that they didn't realize existed." That's a great goal.
It's simple, but the experience of watching somebody move through that, and I bet I've come to know you just a little bit, your experience of coaching people and whatnot, having that light bulb turn on in front of you and then seeing what they do with that insight, to me, what else could there be? That's just such an impact that I see on them, then therefore on the world around them. And if I was somehow involved in that, I get all my fulfillment right there.
Oh, of course. Now you do this both on an individual and in a public format. You do a lot of training, lectures, and so on, do you not?
Yeah, so my company, Productive Learning, we do for kind of two sets of ways of doing it. One is what we call open enrollment. This is just anybody that wants to come take a workshop, any Jack and Jill from the street that wants to come learn about how their system, their mind, their emotions, that plays out and how that functions, and so they can learn how their system works so that they can then be fine-tune that system, whether that's in their relationship with spouse, whether that is in their career, whether that's with their kids, whether their own fulfillment. That's one part of it. But then we also do the same kind of style of workshop and training and coaching for corporations. So we'll go into organizations and help them understand their individual and then collective, which would be defined by their culture. What's the mindset and what's the feel? What's the emotion? What's the best way to have us work together to be productive, to go and achieve whatever said company goals are? And so we'll do that with individuals, but then also in organizations as well.
Oh, I love that. I'm such a major advocate of, Paul and I have this debate all the time, but I'm a major advocate of corporate culture. I think corporate culture will determine a company's success.
Yeah. It's the backbone, it's the muscle of the body of business. We've got the structure that the executives put in place would be the bones. And that's just how businesses run. That is we have this widget, we sell it for that much. That's great. That's the structure. That's the bones of that company.
Right.
Then the muscle, how it all moves together, how it all flexes, does it work well, is it strong, is it weak? That's the culture. So you have to have both. Right, you have to have a sound company structure, but then you also have to have the muscle behind it to get it to wherever you want that body, that system to go to. So it goes hand in hand.
You know, my experience is that the culture is very dependent upon the personality and the style of the CEO or the executive director. Is it possible, do you think, to have a healthy corporate culture without a healthy senior executive?
I think you make it that much more difficult for an already difficult situation, which is business is a difficult situation. We try to get people to do things that they naturally wouldn't go do, and they want to keep going and doing it with you. So that's just trying to influence people's lives. And if the person at the top, which is the one that has the most influence over that muscle and that bone structure of that organization, if I keep using that metaphor.
And exemplifies it.
If they don't exemplify it, well, then what happens? Everybody is more or less going to follow suit and or be at some odds with themselves with boss says go left, everyone else says go right. What do I do?
And then there's in the middle, there's that nice little poster that says what our corporate values
yeah,
are.
Yeah, right.
No one remembers.
It's gaining dust on the wall. Right, exactly. And hopefully the maid service goes and cleans it up and maybe somebody sees it after that. But exactly. So can it be done? I'm sure. And will it last? I wouldn't put money on it.
Well, we're already in agreement. I've worked with the last part of my job is I work primarily with CEOs of. I was fortunate companies. I had five companies. They were billion-dollar companies, and the CEO, the company depended upon, mm-hmm. not the actions but the attitude of the CEO. What sort of culture? What sort of personality mm-hmm. did he bring to that company? And I say he because I happen to work with all men. Mm-hmm. My wife and I are both very strongly female-oriented, but I just wasn't working with women at the time. Now, one of the tools or one of the processes that you use in productive learning is emotional intelligence, or commonly referred to as EQ. Mm-hmm. EQ, not IQ, mm-hmm. but EQ. And today, I would like to get a little bit deeper into EQ and kind of flesh that out and work that out because although I've taken the assessments and I know something about it, I feel like there's a lot I have to learn, and this show actually is all about me. So
fantastic. Let's talk about you then. Let's talk about you.
I'm sure our listeners love that. As I was reading through some information that you sent me, I'm very intrigued by a statement that you made that said there is simply nothing more satisfying than watching an individual dig deep inside themselves. And I'm really curious, what do you mean by digging deep inside themselves? Mm-hmm. What kinds of processes mm-hmm. might you use? Mm-hmm. Because that's sort of the mantra of today, isn't mm-hmm. it, of mm-hmm. of understanding myself. And it's just, there's all kinds of chaos that's coming out as a result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's say we'll use the metaphor of the iceberg, which is used a lot in psychology. And the iceberg symbolizing the part that is above the water, that which we can see when we're out on the ocean, which would be our conscious mind. That which we are aware of, we see it, we could state it. If I said, what do you think about X? You would be able to answer, well, I think this about X. What do you think about this radio show? What do you think about your career? You'd answer that. Those would be all these conscious thoughts that you have, the top of the iceberg. That is maybe 10% of the thinking, the actual neuronal pathways and connections and firings going on in that brain of yours. That's right. Maybe 10%
yeah,
of what's going on.
High. Yeah.
If it's that high, exactly. Yeah. The rest of that iceberg, which is submerged under the water and we're not aware of, we could call our unconscious subconscious. For all intents and purposes, let's consider those the same. Okay?
Okay.
When I talk about, or when my company is leading workshops and we talk about digging deep, we're not talking about, tell me what you know about you. I don't care what you know about you. That won't change your life. You already know that. I want to talk about, what are all the thoughts, what are all the paradigms, what are all the constructs that you have that are functioning in that brain of yours that are unconscious to you, that are going on below the surface of the water in that iceberg part, the part of the iceberg that sunk the Titanic, the one that we don't see and we don't understand. Because we have thoughts that are going on, but we're not privy to them. We're not seeing them as they are functioning. We're seeing the output and results of them. So what I mean by that is we have these thoughts that are going on as we are entering into the room, into our work environment, going home to our spouse, what have you. We have both conscious thoughts. Those are the ones that I know, which is I'm upset with work and I'm going home to my spouse and I'm hungry and I just want to relax, whatever that is. We also have what's going on underneath the surface, which wouldn't be able to be seen, but it's felt.
Which is driving that those conscious choices.
Where's the mass of the iceberg? Is it the top 10% or is it the bottom 90% that's moving, right? The wind will move it a little bit, but no, it's the swell and all of the rest of the ocean that's moving and actually creating whatever the outcome is for that iceberg, which is the same thing for us. So we walk into our environment, name it, whatever that is, your business, your home, your gym, your whatever that is, and the beliefs and paradigms that are running are unconscious to us still show up and still act or influence the emotions that we have, and the emotions drive us to take some kind of action. Therefore, our unconscious thinking influences our actions and thus the results we have in our life.
I totally resonate with what you're saying and agree with what you're saying. As a matter of fact, we did a podcast on the unconscious last week.
Fantastic.
But I have a feeling.
I'm repeating you.
No, you're not. You're taking it a whole different direction. And I want to ask, if it is unknown, mm-hmm. if it's below the water, how mm-hmm. do you access it?
Super. So we use a methodology which is very simple. It's experiential learning. The way that the mind learns is through experience. When we come out into this world, we are more or less a blank slate. We have some predispositions based on our genetic, based on what mom and dad and how and the makeup that they gave us, that DNA, you know, that they gave us.
Sure.
But we're still being influenced by the majority of the environment and the situation around us. Mom, dad, brother, sister, in a house, moving, not moving, school, teachers, you name it. All of that, when we are growing up, we are taking in all of this information.
So that's sort of the combination between nurture and nature.
Bingo. You got it. We've got predispositions, but that doesn't mean anything until you put it into an environment. And that environment then triggers how that predisposition is then activated and manifested. The actions, behaviors, thoughts, the feelings, all of that is actually manifested. That's how learning happens, through experience, earliest on. So we take that same philosophy with how we conduct our workshops and our trainings and our coaching through experiential processes. So for example, we've got a workshop called Beyond Reasons. It's a two-day workshop. It happens in Southern California almost every month. In that workshop, we will put our clients through some processes. They will have to play a game. They will have to do a mind puzzle. They will have to work together. They'll have to do certain things on their own. What they actually do doesn't matter. It's how they go about doing it and all the results and feelings and thoughts that are going on during that process, so that we start to stimulate that whole iceberg of thinking, the conscious thoughts and the unconscious thoughts, because they will manifest themselves through whatever you do. You walk into any room, any environment, the sum total of your thinking will start to manifest itself. So we put them into certain exercises, and they do whatever it is they do, right? It's that predisposition towards certain things. It's their characteristics.
And they're learning that whole time.
Well, so then we pause them, right? So they go do whatever it is, and then we pause and we say, hold on. Let's pretend that we could step outside of ourselves. Remember the Truman Show? Remember Jim Carrey,
yes,
the Truman Show?
Yes.
Where he was in this completely fabricated world. We, as a metaphor, say, let's pretend we just did the Charlie Show. Let's pretend we just did the Lyndon Show. And we could rewind what just happened over that last 10 minutes when you went and played with that game, or you went and did that thing by yourself, or you went and worked with the team. How did you think about doing all the different actions that you did? And we would track what those actions were. And they'd think, wow, I decided to get into this group because I thought that would be a smart person to be with, and that wouldn't be a good person to be with. And then I thought, I'm getting anxious because we're not doing as well. Okay, got it. All these different data points. That's the manifestation of the thinking going on. So now we have a data point of an output, and we have the idea that the thinking that's going on, both the conscious and unconscious, are at play. We've got an equation. Thinking plus the emotions that happen from the thinking will create the actions. And we just captured the actions. Let's see if we can start to dissect what some of the emotions are through that process. Okay, how did you feel? What were the emotions? Were you excited? Were you angry? Were you upset? Did you think this was all bullshit? Did you think this was enjoyable? What happened? What were the emotions? Got it. Now we've got two parts out of the three-part equation. Thoughts, feelings, actions. We've got the actions. We've got the feelings. And then we can start to see, so then what must the thoughts have been that triggered that emotional state,
that
then that created the kind of actions that you did. And so by process of deduction, kind of like a Platonic and Socratic reasoning,
sure,
we can figure out the thinking that's going on.
So actually the experience will lead to, what is the process I'm using, which will actually lead to back to my nature, back to my DNA that's impacting that, or my pathologies that are driving me, my lack of self-esteem or my tendency toward anger or whatever we want to use.
Bingo. Correct. So the processes and the exercises and games we play, obviously, if we play a game of Legos, let's say, you're not going to your work the next day and playing Legos. And so then the question is, okay, so how do I understand or assimilate what we did in this workshop, in this quote-unquote laboratory setting of the Charlie Show, of the Lyndon Show, of the Truman Show, and how do I relate that out into the rest of life, into the real world? Well, if you remember, the thinking that created it is just a reaction to the environment that's going on. So then we have to figure out, well, what environment did you perceive was going on in this games process? And how does your mind assimilate that, or what's familiar to that in the outside world?
I love it. I let's make sure that I get somehow listeners can sign up, because I may sign up.
Fantastic.
I'm interested, so we'll make sure that we get them. You know, I want to tell you that I've had on the show several times, I have a personal coach, mm-hmm. and we're going through archetypes, and she believes that each of us have 9 archetypes. Everybody believes some have one, some have, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But she works on a theory that there are 9. And she uses role play, and we've even done role play on the show.
Oh, fantastic.
Where she had me play a pirate. And it is amazing if you truly get into that role.
Yeah.
And you get out of what's expected of me, mm-hmm. and that I'm playing this role, and what would this role look like? The unconscious that gets tapped into.
Bingo.
Because I am no longer have the blockages of my conscious blocking me of this. This is a whole new experience, and I'm answering it any way that I want to answer. And
beautiful.
And it came to new conclusions. It was really an exciting process. I've done role play with her a few times, and it's been.
Yeah, I love that. And we have a couple of those kinds of exercises in different workshops that we have. And really what I think is a great way for us to understand how our system works. How does Lyndon's system work? How does Charlie's system work? Is to be able to step out of ourselves to see from a different perspective, looking back at how we would normally do. So how do we do that? You know, stepping into a different kind of environment or a different role so we can see the difference. That's why you before the podcast, you were talking about work in Uganda, and you do a lot of different work, I think, for
Wells of Life.
For Wells of Life, right? Yes. And that's around the world, and I'm sure you've got to experience the different cultures that are around the world.
Oh, yes, I travel extensively.
So yeah. You can see, if you were to just grow up in our Orange County suburb bubble, how, if that's all you saw, you wouldn't be able to gain a wider perspective, because that's all your lens of life looked at. But the first time you stepped out of the state of California or out of the country of the U.S., all of a sudden you saw, oh my gosh, that's how they go and drink. Oh my gosh, that's how they go and cook. Oh my gosh, that's how they treat men and women and power and esteem and money and sex. Oh, that helps me understand the bubble that I lived in, because it gives 2 reference points. right? That is great. That's a great way of looking and learning about how your system functions, which can be role play can do that. Step into a different perspective so that when you go back and get back into your normal perspective, all of a sudden the difference is profound.
You know, and you don't have to go to another country. Just go to another county.
Sure.
I went this last weekend. I did a retreat where I didn't conduct a retreat. I was a participant mm-hmm. in the retreat. 19 people in Malibu, 5 acres overlooking the ocean. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, you know, it's a person's house.
Beautiful.
It's their farm. I'm thinking, you know, she said she squeaked into it 21 years ago and and, you know, she could retire 12 times over mm-hmm. just off the property. But one of the things I noticed is they were mostly L.A. people, a few people from out of the country. There were 19 people there. There were 2 or 3 people out of the country and out of the state, out of the area. But mostly were L.A. people. Mm-hmm. There is such a different mindset in L.A. than Orange County.
Sure.
It is. Orange County is so into image, that the L.A. County people that I met, and there were 19 people there, uh-huh. and so I'm sure probably at least a dozen from L.A. County. Uh-huh. I was the only Orange County inhabitant there, and they were like from a different country, and it's just different counties and you know what? You know, just as an aside, what's really interesting, I took a hike, and these houses are pretty expensive houses.
Sure,
you know, you're
sure.
in Malibu.
They're multi-million
dollar multi-million dollar houses. Mm-hmm. And I saw no Mercedes, no BMWs. You know, they're driving Fords and Chevys and Honda Civics mm-hmm. and all this. And, you know, in Orange County, you know, if you're not driving a Lexus, you know, then what's wrong with you? You know?
Yeah.
It's so image-oriented. And so you can just... You don't have to go to another country. Just go to a place where
Agreed.
People are thinking differently to get us out of that. I like that Truman story mm-hmm. Of that bubble that we are mm-hmm. in the midst of that bubble.
It's too bad that your listeners don't get to see you, because if they saw the image that you portray with your planet riddled T-shirt you got going on, man. You guys are really missing a show here. It's enjoyable.
Yes, I love this shirt. You know what I want to do? We can go on talking about this, but I'm going to get a little specific, and I want to get on in a minute. I was just speaking to our producer. I want to get on to the use of one tool, and I want to talk about EQ mm-hmm. and emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And can you begin that? We'll just start talking about that, and then we'll take a break and get into it deeply. But first of all, just for our listeners, explain EQ. How is it different from IQ? Why is it important?
Sure. So let's make it simple. IQ is the knowledge, is information, is facts. EQ is not about the out there information and facts. It's more about the in here, what's going on inside of me, and how are my emotions and thoughts working. And that then creates, like I said before, our actions and behaviors, and thus the results in my life. So EQ doesn't... You're not going to learn emotional intelligence by getting your PhD in chemistry. You may build, or your IQ may understand more information. That's fine. That's great. IQ is also, so science is telling us, is not really malleable. It's fairly
right.
set early on.
Right, right.
EQ, the more that you can understand how you work, the more you can then manage your thinking and manage your emotions to show up in certain ways with genuine sincerity, and with that, be able to also influence people. And that is what EQ is. It's my ability to manage myself, my thinking, my emotions, and that I could also do with understanding how you function and you work. And if I wanted to use that to influence people, I would be better able to do that. So that's where the difference is between IQ and EQ. Nothing wrong with IQ. Fantastic. Those that are knowledgeable are wonderful and needed. And those that can understand how to work a room, those can that can understand how to move through conflicts and have those tough kinds of conversations, that's what a master of emotional intelligence would be.
And could probably, my guess, is actually be more successful than the higher IQ person because they can communicate, they can relate, they can influence, mm-hmm. whereas the person with just the data just comes on and it's just...
Bingo, yeah. There's more and more data and information that says those with higher IQ are more successful and fulfilled in life than EQ show. Now, EQ is without a doubt necessary because if you get too far down on that totem pole, then you just you actually can't function. Your value to society is less. But those with that threshold is very low. Everybody has something to give. If you can develop your emotional intelligence, as you just stated, I can manage myself in tough situations. I can show up in great situations. I can be influential. I can resolve conflict. I can have those tough conversations.
And you know when.
And you know when and how.
And you know when do you, you know,
I know
when
how
do
to
use
have it
which
with,
skill.
Exactly. I know how to have it with you and you're this kind of person. And I can walk into another room and genuinely move to show up in a different way with somebody that's quiet and more shy, and then I can walk into the next room and somebody that's loud and robust and flamboyant, I can meet them with their energy and be able to create rapport in a relationship. So you can see how EQ could be more successful or can lead you to more success, in success defined by whatever you want to define that by, whether that's money, whether that's fulfillment, whether that's joy, whether that's esteem, you name it. So yeah,
you know what I want to do. And if I end up doing it and you disagree, then go ahead and tell me, because I am personally malleable. I may cry, but that's okay. What I want to do is, you know, there is an assessment that you say you don't use, mm-hmm. but that you can, if you buy the book Emotional Intelligence, you can take the assessment and it. It's a self-assessment, so it evaluates your own EQ mm-hmm. score, like an IQ mm-hmm. score. And I just want to read, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 areas, just to give our listeners an idea of what EQ, what it covers. Does that sound?
Beautiful.
Okay, and it says, first is your self-perception. Mm-hmm. Do you have an accurate perception of who you are, how you come off, what other people are thinking? You know, are you coming off like an open person? Are you coming off like a jerk, like my way or the highway? Mm-hmm. Second one is self-expression. Mm-hmm. How do you express yourself? Third, interpersonal composite. Mm-hmm. There is how do you act with other people. The fourth one is decision making, mm-hmm. and the last one is stress management. So mm-hmm. it gives you an idea, it gives our listeners an idea that is the coverage is wide mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. on EQ, it's not just on knowing how to deal with other people. There's a lot more involved in that process. Now, if you don't use... Oh, I'm wondering if I should go to a break, but I have so many questions.
let's take a break while you're sorting through them here.
We've answered that question, so never mind, audience. We've already answered that question. Okay, what I want to come to you now, and this will be after the break, but I'm giving you prepared time to think about it.
Oh, goody.
Is there are some issues that are EQ issues that really take a whole different level of professional assistance than what we as coaches or trainers, you know, they take psychotherapists, that because these things are going back mm-hmm. deep childhood, and no matter, and we'll talk more and more about mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. but that's what I want to come back with. But right now, we're going to take a brief break and we'll come right back and come at it. Thank you. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And we are here today with Lyndon Crow, who is president of Productive Learning, a company whose goal is to help people become the best versions of themselves. And right now, we're talking about EQ, or emotional intelligence. And I set up Lyndon with a question that I have as we're working with EQ and people that have, how do I say it, have needs that in the EQ area that are actually damaging their own reputation, damaging the company, damaging themselves. And so at what point do you realize that an individual is incapable personally of improving his or her EQ without some sort of psychotherapy, because the issue goes so deep that it goes back to childhood and they just can't make up their mind not to be an angry SOB anymore? You know, there are buttons that are getting pushed there. What do you do in that kind of situation?
So this is my opinion. This is how I look at it. My thought about how coaches work, whether that's executive coaches, whether that's coaches like what we have on emotional intelligence, whether that's trainers in a group format, which is what we also do, whether that is assessments and tests on emotional intelligence or personal characteristics, or whether that is therapy, whether that is with a master's in psychology or an MFT up to a doctorate in psychology, and going to what people would call therapists, right, and doing that. All of that, the way that I look at it, is different modalities to find the same thing. And what's the way in which it's best for you? So if you and I decided to today decide to run a marathon next year, what's the modality that we would take? Would you do one-on-one coaching? Would you go to the gym on a biweekly basis and go to the group class? Would you go get an elliptical or a spin machine with one of those Peloton bikes where you get to see yourself on a big screen with people that are plugging in around the world? We're both trying to accomplish the same thing, yet I decided to go get a one-on-one coach. You decided to just do it yourself at home by sheer discipline, by reading a book or a blog to see
Although I'm an alcoholic, I decided to drink and not even think about
or
it.
Or maybe you did that.
Because I don't want to do that at
right.
all.
But it's this. So going back to it, it's the same kind of method. It's the same outcome that we're trying to achieve, and it's the different method that would be necessary to get there. In productive learning, we do group formats of experiential learning. The reason we do it that way is because the world is not experienced in isolation. You're not experiencing yourself in your work environment with just the one person that you're having an issue with. You're also with the good relationship over there and the okay relationship on the second floor and the boss that's on the top floor and the new person that's coming in at the bottom floor.
But it is all about relationship.
Relationship. And so that the varying dynamic that life has, we believe, can be best recreated in a group environment and dynamic that we create in a workshop. And there are certain people that it's not helpful for them to go do that because it's too, the stimulation of that has them shut down. They can't see. They do what I call white out, meaning I'm still fully present with you and I'm talking with you, but I've lost track of what the conversation is and I'm not actually pulling it in.
Really?
So maybe the environment is actually not the best or conducive for their learning and growth. In that case, go to the one-on-one. Go get the therapist or the psychologist or the coach and go get the learning that you need with that. In our workshops, we will look at the thinking that comes from the experiences of childhood. And there's a lot of traumas that go on in life, and many of which never get brought up. They just deal with it. They just live their life because that's what they saw that they had to go do. And build their paradigms and their constructs about how the world works and how people function and what power and esteem and money, and they just move forward with life, even though it may be limiting. There's other people that go through traumas where they can't in at least a, how would I say this, a more healthy way, be able to rationalize the experience that they had and the experience that they're continuing to have out in the real world. Right. And they need more one-on-one time to pull that apart and dissect that and see their agency and or where their agency stops and there is they are actually at the whim of what the environment was around them. That would be like childhood trauma of abuse of some kind.
Especially if it's very traumatic.
Right.
And it takes them back to that place. And then they just shut down again because they don't want to have to face that.
Exactly. And in a workshop environment where there's 25 people in a workshop, then having them shut down and we've got 24 other people that need to continue and are moving on, but we can't give that one-on-one attention, the workshop environment's not for them. They need somebody that can come back to them week after week and just sit with them in that experience and have them recreate that experience, but in a safe environment where they don't have to move any faster than they are willing to. That would be the difference of going from between a coach or workshop environment, which is what we have, versus going to a one-on-one therapist's setting.
And I would add capable, willing, and capable, and maybe both are the same.
Both, yes, I would agree.
Could be the same term.
I'd agree.
Let me give you an example. And I want to be careful because it's a current example, and I don't want to give away if anybody happens to be listening that's involved, I don't want them to know.
Let's not talk about Joe then.
Okay, we won't talk about Joe. There are plenty of people to talk about, but I work with an exceedingly productive leader. When we're looking at performance, it exceeds expectations all the way. However, the person simply and absolutely sucks at emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. Just is not there.
Defined by what? Because just as you said, we got these big, broad things.
Defined by anger.
So a very angry person, but very productive, meaning he can get...
But what the person does is gives the organization to vendors and to clients, gives a bad reputation because of the anger and the self-protection and the inability to trust other people. There are a number of issues. So it's a pathology that is causing his
upset.
Well, it's causing the leadership to question the validity of this person, even though they're excelling with expectations. There's liabilities if you're messing up relationships and the image of the company. Then, what's more important? So those are important factors. Now here's what's interesting, Lyndon. Is he understands that he has a hole, that he has a problem. He understands that he has anger issues, and he gets very frustrated with himself when it comes out. But he desires to change it. Mm. He's really willing. He's very, very willing. Whatever I can do to be a better leader. But I look at my role as a coach. I will work with him more and more and more as a coach. But I think when somebody has something that, especially like anger is, anger goes way back. That's one of your anger and fear, your primal issues. Do you think that's the kind of person, does that strike you just of what I said, the kind of person that would benefit from a psychotherapist or some kind of in-depth work with that individually as well as working with a coach? Is that the kind of person that you might consider that activity?
Well, my assumption is that you are quite an experienced coach, and your work with him is, I would assume, you're probably doing some exceptional work on helping him start to see that. And if you have somebody that is seeing the wake that they leave behind them, and I believe you also said he's willing and wanting
yes.
to do something about that, and you're not getting through on that, then I'd go back to what I was saying earlier. The modality for him may not be the way that it, or the best, how do I say this? The best modality for him may not be this one-on-one coaching. It may be a different environment.
Yeah, or a combination of both.
Or a combination
so he
of always both.
Says, so he knows he has my support, my
Bingo.
Love, my
yeah,
care,
yeah.
that I'm on his team, that I want him to succeed.
Oh, without a doubt. We have a lot of clients that do ongoing work with us. We continuously write new workshops. And so there's clients that have been with us for 25 years, and they just continue to like and learn, like the workshops and learn more and more about themselves. And there's... I couldn't tell you how many, but there's a good number that go in and out of also supplementing their workshop learning with productive learning with going to therapy and or going to couples counseling or going to a different organization and doing another workshop and or they're huge, I would assume demographically and psychographically that a lot of our clients read a lot of the self-help books. And do a lot of the watching of the TED Talks and YouTube videos on that. So I wouldn't say pick one and take that. No, I think that would be quite a righteous standpoint and actually lessening or limiting the value which could help you with your growth. So yeah, if this person that you're working with is feeling safe to have these kinds of conversations with you and you're seeing movement, then supplement that with something else where it addresses directly the anger and upset and fear, like you said, that maybe you don't have the specific expertise on, but boy, oh boy, he wants somebody in his corner because after he walks out of that therapist's office, he'd like to go to somebody that understands and is only rooting for him, as opposed to going back in the company where he's got to play a little bit of the, I don't want people to know everything and I got to make sure I cover my butt, but also am helping and being open. So
that's great advice. That's great because I had actually thought of kind of leaving him in the hands of a therapist and not quite walking away, but I will be with him for the next couple of weeks, coming in a couple of weeks, and I will spend quality time with him. You know, he's in a foreign country, and he and I will spend a lot of time, and this will be besides our business. This will be a large part of our conversation. But
beautiful.
We just have a few minutes left, and Paul, we just started. How much we've got to end right on time today? Okay, so that was a flaky Charlie. I'd like to go home. So what I want to do is we had talked about this, and we had talked that personal examples are really helpful. You know, we can mm-hmm. talk in theory, mm-hmm. but personals. So let's just go to me. And since this show is all about me, we'll talk about me.
All right.
And I have taken this instrument I showed you, and you said you don't use the instrument, but oh well, it's there. And it shows that, for the most part, I am...
Pretty awesome.
Reasonable. Remember, that's me scoring myself. So, but that I do, you know, and I do believe I have a strong degree of self-awareness of, mm-hmm. that my emotional quotient is pretty high, mm-hmm. but you know, it's been over the years of studying and working at it. You know, it just didn't, you know, I didn't come out of the womb like that. Mm-hmm. But you know what I scored low on, and I don't even know if score is the right word, but it showed that it was the lowest ranking on mine mm-hmm. was impulse control. Which is then defined as the ability to resist or delay impulse to act, which I am absolutely terrible at, Lyndon. I am on the Myers-Briggs. Mm-hmm. I am a P off the chart. you know, so I love spontaneity. I love creativity and doing new things, and I am impulsive. All of a sudden, I'll get this idea that I want to do something. Now, it's not that I don't think about it. It's not like I'm an ignoramus.
Sure.
You know, I'll go through it and I'll think about it, but, you know, once that desire hits, also I wanted to mention that as a solopreneur, I really don't have employees and other people I work with other than, you know, my wife, my family. We really don't work in the same job. Mm-hmm. So I'm not impacting a lot of people internally in an organization. I'm impacting my clients, mm-hmm. impacting my friends, mm-hmm. but I'm not, you know, the leader of an organization that's impacting dozens or hundreds of people or whatever. Mm-hmm. So my question for you is twofold. One, what do you think, and I want to talk about specifically about impulse control, what do you think it means, even though you don't know me, and maybe mm-hmm. you just say, Charlie, I don't know enough about you to answer this question, but what does it mean to score so low on impulse control, and two, should I do anything about it?
That's a great question. Great question. So this is how I would get curious about is what about the spontaneity, what about the impulsiveness do you find so attractive?
You know, I was a minister. After, you know, I've had like 7 careers and 10 different lives. And I had a mentor in seminary. And when I left seminary, and I went to a very conservative seminary, which I'm not a very conservative, I'm not an extraordinary liberal person, but I am more progressive than I am conservative. But this was a very conservative, matter of fact, it had the seminary with the redundant name, Western Conservative Baptist. And it's going to say, what are you going to call a Western Liberal Baptist? I mean, you know, it's like, that is redundant. But at the end of our time, I went to my mentor and said, do you have any words for me that could guide me in my future career as an in-church minister? And he said, this I have against you. And it turned out to be, to me, a praise, and he meant it as not. He says, you have a proclivity for the novel.
You're like, yes! You know? Yeah. He gets me.
and that is it. I my strong archetypes are explorer, adventurer, mm-hmm. leader. You know, those are, I love discovering. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I had an assignment with a class one time that they said they want you to develop a logo of yourself, which I thought was a tremendous assignment.
Sure.
And my logo was a question mark, and the period of the question mark was the Earth. And that I just question everything that happens. It is now expanded to the Milky Way, you know, where the Earth doesn't have enough questions for me. Uh-huh. But that I'm a very curious person, and so spontaneity and that impulse really fills those curiosity needs that I want to know more and I want to learn more.
So beautiful. Love that. You just described more of yourself. You actually didn't answer my question. So what about that novelty? What about that you question the world and now the galaxy? What is so appealing about that? And go to what the emotional pull is.
Oh, you can't have silence on radio, and yet I need to.
Here, I'll sing.
I grow bored easily. That's why I've had 7 different careers. I grow bored easily. Love new information.
Perfect. So let's just pause and take that. So there's actually a repulsion of feeling boredom. Boredom to you has some big negative connotation. Go to find somebody else, and they're looking to say, hey, I just want to veg on Netflix all afternoon. And you're thinking, holy cow, what are you doing? And that may be what they're drawn to. You're actually possibly, this is just off of your 3 words that you said,
sure,
are moving so fast away from that feeling that it has to be something new all the time. And so there's a pull towards that hit, that fix, that adrenaline rush, the new, the novel, whatever that emotion is. But there's also a deterrent, a repulsion, a I don't want to feel boredom. And then I would get curious I wonder in Charlie's history, why or how has he come to be so repulsed, or why is he so unwilling to sit with the feelings of boredom?
Oh, I could explain that to you.
If this your show, man.
I had a very traumatic childhood, and I lived with several different households. So I had places to live, but no homes. And so I would move from one to another, always thinking, you know, I'm the king of first impression, but after you get to know me, you know, you really don't care for me that much.
That's what you learned.
That was the way I had ended up interpreting that.
So then there's this part of your feeling is if you stick around to the point where you typically would get bored, you'll go and recreate or re-experience the feeling of not being liked, wanted, cared about, loved, whatever compassionate emotion.
Holy shit, the podcast is over.
We just ran out of time, folks.
We just came to the solution that I'm looking for. That's great. That's exactly, you know, I can't tell you how many years of therapy I've been through, and that's really brilliant insight. That's great.
You follow that? So if you stick around, it goes and recreates the environment that you, as that little kid that kept getting booted and moved around or however that was, you couldn't stand. So what could you? Let's keep doing something new, because the first impression has the high of it. The new house, people like you. They're trying to feed you different things and show you the different ways around playing in this neighborhood or whatever that is. There's a nice, good, positive, loving feeling to that. On the other side, staying around too long, it inevitably went to an emotion that you didn't like. So you have, fast forward that little construct, that small paradigm that you developed as the little kid. Now go 20, 30, 40 years later, wow, I'm a guy that likes spontaneity. Yeah, because you also have this repulsion of if they actually got to know you, they would, your mind is projecting, would kick you out or would not want you anymore.
So what do I do with that?
Well, you asked, your second question is, do I need to change that? And I would ask you, well, do you feel successful? Do you want something different where not having that need to be impulsive would help you get there?
If no.
then no. You've got a great asset. You're an entrepreneur, you are a free thinker, you like to look at a white canvas and then go crazy on it. So you've got a great, great asset. It's only if that asset is used across the board in certain areas where you'd have to sit there and you'd have to hang on for a while and you'd have to, for you, experience boredom, and that would get you the end result that you want. That's the only time that I would say, yeah, well, then obviously there's something that we need to work on and change.
It's interesting. I just went on it. You know, I said I went on a retreat this weekend, mm-hmm. and there were some intentions, and one of the intention was I just turned 69, so I get to be calling myself old now. older. That I wanted to rediscover or reignite the joy of life. Mm. And the message that was given to me in this retreat is, Charlie, you are the joy of life. Mm. Mm. It is not external, it is internal. And you need to look at it. And without putting any structures around that, in the 4 days since the retreat, I have not felt, you know, my wake up in the morning, what am I going to do today? You know, I'm used to being really busy. I'm retired now. And and just saying, I'm loving my day. I'm enjoying my day. Nice. And I'm enjoying the fact that I have friends. I love people. I am loved by just enough because I'm an introvert. Mm-hmm. So I'm loved by just enough. So it really is true. I am the joy in life. And that is kind of what you're saying, is that I need to find that place that I can sit and be comfortable and not having to necessarily always find something new and something exciting.
If what you are experiencing is helping you get to where you want to go, then I don't have a need for you to change anything. If what you are wanting is not able to be had because of some of these assessments and what they do tell you, which I would say may be accurate, and your inability to manage that emotion or work with that kind of person, if what those are telling you don't help you go and get what you do want, well, then there is something to change. There is something to work on.
Lyndon, you are no wonder you are running a successful business. You're a very insightful young man. To me, everybody's a young man, except Paul. So I want to thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been just a great pleasure having you.
Thank you very much.
And I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and be sure to check us out at our website, which is thenextchapter.life. That's L-I-F-E. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.